ERP Advisors Group presents What to Do When You Outgrow Your Accounting Software.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's webinar, What to Do When You Outgrow Your Accounting Software. Today's presentation is valid for one CPE credit. In order to receive CPE credit, each attendee is required to attend the full 50-minute presentation, as well as engage and answer all of the polling questions asked throughout the presentation. If you are needing CPE credit for today's presentation, please leave your name in the chat of this Zoom, or please send an email to Juliet@ERPAdvisorsGroup.com for record, and you will be issued a certificate for CPE. At the end of today's presentation, there'll be a short question and answer period. If you have a question for our presenter, please add it in the chat section or Q&A section of this Zoom. Today's learning objectives are to understand why companies outgrow their accounting software, know how to decide if you need to upgrade, explore the four tiers of accounting applications, overview of additional financial reporting tools, and to understand the key points for approaching a software selection. Sean Windel is our presenter for today. Sean is the founder and managing principal of ERP Advisors Group based in Denver, Colorado. Sean has worked in the enterprise software industry for over 20 years. He started his career at Accenture and Arthur Andersen Business Consulting and moved into the software industry with Oracle as a technology product manager. There are only a few people in the world with the practical software experience that Sean has gained with helping hundreds of clients across many industries with selecting and implementing a wide variety of enterprise solutions. Sean, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you're ready, I'll pass it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Juliet. I'm not sure that I can live up to that introduction, but I'm going to do my best with it. So, actually, if we go back a slide, just to do a, just sort of a finish up on introductions. So Enterprise Advisor, ERP Advisors Group, we're here out of the Denver area. We've kind of become one of the industry's top advisory firms, meaning we don't sell software, we don't sell implementation services. We just help clients with figuring out exactly what is best for them and then ensuring that they get the right implementation approach and the right implementation approach correct. So bottom line is what I'm about to share with you today, there is no, we're sponsored by blah, definitely not QuickBooks, nor anything around trying to sell implementation services or get into some of those factors, that we're really trying to put out some really key points that we've found over the years have helped CFOs, controllers, really accounting professionals and others to really evaluate enterprise software based on what's best for them. So that's what we're going to do today, and that is our learning objective, as Juliet said. Let's jump into it. So this is really important that over the years, what we have found is there's good reasons to switch your accounting software, and there's not so good reasons. So really, through about 300 projects somehow in the last 10 years amongst all of our professionals, we've really identified these four categories of reasons why an organization to look to switch, usually out of QuickBooks, right? There is also other applications like Xero and other applications that are smaller that sort of fit into that tier four level as well. But we're mostly going to talk through kind of QuickBooks today. The first one is growth. So if you look at an organization and you think about an accounting system, accounting's accounting, right? Debits or credits. And, you know, I have to dust off my own accounting background. I am a CPA inactive, but even from my own training, right? Whether you're doing accounting for a multi-billion dollar organization or a couple million dollar organization, accounting is accounting. But there are things that happen in an accounting system, specifically in QuickBooks around growth, that can create a lot of problems. The first one is more business transactions to track. So what we're talking about here are basically anything you can think of. More sales orders are going into the system. More vendor bills are going into the system. More journal entries. The reality is I think we actually just got into this recently on our ERP news that, you know, Intuit, who owns QuickBooks, they are really the largest accounting sort of customers based on enterprise systems and software systems over really anybody else. They have the most customers. It's in the millions. Most organizations throughout the world are smaller. If you look at sort of how the distribution of companies are, but the reality is as those organizations get bigger and bigger and bigger, there's more transactions. QuickBooks will eventually die in terms of its database structure and its performance on how it's set up to meet those needs for transactions or not. So that's a big reason why you should say, wow, we got a lot more transactions, and you'll know the indicators. And I have a feeling from some of the folks that RSVP'd and working with you in the past that you've actually experienced those situations before where, wow, QuickBooks crashes. Okay, well, let's make sure that the servers are in good shape and that, you know, the technology infrastructure is okay, but we've done that and it still crashes. You're pushing it too hard in terms of transactions. Couple other things here under growth. We're offering new products and services where QuickBooks isn't necessarily set up to do certain things. So we've had clients before that are maybe professional service providers. They're billing their time just fine through QuickBooks. And now they need to do resource management. They need to do some detailed project execution work, and QuickBooks doesn't necessarily provide that function. So sure, there's bolt-ons that can do it with QuickBooks, and that might be the right answer. But that's an example of moving in through new services where ultimately the application is just not set up to do that. Definitely selling into new markets. We see this a lot related to the fifth bullet there, the sub bullet under growth too, where maybe we've acquired an entity that's in a foreign country, where we're going into sort of even the second to last bullet there, where things are changing with the business, where we are offering maybe a new customer segment. We're going out to a different sort of business line and maybe even a different geography that requires total and different regulatory reporting requirements, even tax sort of requirements. And QuickBooks just isn't made for that. But, you know, we had a client that was $100 million in revenue, maybe just shy of that, and they were able to use the class field for kind of tracking separate legal entities. So there's ways you can get around it for sure, but at a certain point, you have to say, is it really worth it? So growth, check. Great reason to switch off of QuickBooks or similar applications. The next one here, I'm going to go kind of bottom and then move over, is legacy technology. So we run into this a lot where an organization maybe is on an application that they've had for a while. This might not necessarily be QuickBooks, but it could be other applications too that they've basically outgrown, where the original business model of the organization was a certain way. Maybe it was written on a certain product, a technology platform product. And that technology platform product, say Fox Pro, is like gone. Nobody knows Fox Pro. We actually have a client that I can throw a rock at and hit that basically was running their business on a Fox Pro database, and only one person knew that. So that's another great reason why companies outgrow their legacy accounting software. And it's something to really keep in mind. It goes with that too, that we have a guy or a gal who, you know, we prefer that they win the lottery. You got to watch out for all the buses in town these days. So we don't want something to happen to that person, because if it does, who's going to support our applications? And another big thing that we run into in terms of legacy technology sort of products is that the app just doesn't do what it should anymore. So maybe, again, from a performance perspective, or our business has changed where we've gone from, you know, oh, lead times with our vendors is not a problem, to last year where it's a major, major problem, and we don't have any applications to support being able to change our available to promise side for a manufacturer or distributor, right? The app doesn't support that. Ooh, we need to tell customers when they should expect their products. Our app doesn't do it. Another good reason why, if our legacy technology is not meeting our needs, can it? Now, there's two other areas too, right? Where, especially today, really over the last several years, I'd even say, you know, the ASC 606 around sort of recurring revenue recognition or revenue recognition changes, some of the lease standards and pronouncements that are coming out. There's several different sort of things that the, you know, AICPA, FASB, organizations are doing, the SEC, where those regulatory changes have direct impact into your financial reporting. So oftentimes, a QuickBooks, a legacy accounting system, smaller accounting systems, really not made to do that. However, I will tell you that we know of organizations that have gone public on QuickBooks. So Sarbanes-Oxley and that, of course, around internal controls, around financial statement generation and reporting, there are controls you can put in place, but you sort of have to look at the cost-benefit analysis of adding more people or whatever it is to do segregation of duties by adding more people versus actually having controls built into the system. So again, regulatory changes, check. That's a good reason to at least look at switching. This last area too, this is probably... I have to think back at this. When I look back at a lot of clients that we've helped over the years, this is probably one of the biggest reasons, probably the second biggest reason. I guess there's four listed here, but I would say it's two. Growth is the first. But the second reason that we've run into why people come to us and say, hey, we want to switch our accounting, is usually there's a new leader. And that could be in the IT department. That could be the CEO. That could be a new private equity. It could be a new CFO, controller. Or even accounting manager, where somebody comes in and says, that's it, I'm done, right? We talked to a controller recently at a large organization that was just saying, like, what we're doing in our current system is embarrassing. And I can't have this. This can't happen on my watch. I need to come in. I need to make a change. Should I do it or not? To which we said, you know, you'd be crazy not to, especially since you're considering becoming a SPAC. I think that's why he came to us in the first place. But new leadership is a major, major reason. Oftentimes, folks are looking to sort of automate manual processes. It takes a new person sometimes to come into an organization to say, yeah, you know how we're doing AP approvals? Yeah, that was like, you know, the Fred Flintstone era where we're running our cars by our feet. Let's get some automation, some workflow approval built into a matrix within the system and have it driven from there. And then sometimes we've had situations too, especially on the private equity side, where an organization will take over a business, usually not hostile, but sometimes it is. I can think of one client about 8 years ago where this happened, where the new private equity came in and said, we use Microsoft Dynamics 365 Nav for all of our holding companies. We have specialists that know that product. We know how to get reports out of it, and you're going to switch to Nav. And the controller said, but that product doesn't fit my needs. And it wasn't a great fit for her business. And they said, we don't care. And she said, okay, I'm out. And she left. So, you know, mandating is always tricky when it comes to enterprise software, because you really need agreement amongst all the key stakeholders to make a decision. But that can happen where new leadership comes in and says, okay, we need to do this. Or the other instance we're seeing a lot of in the last 5 years is, you know, I really don't feel comfortable with our server in the closet that somebody could spill some coffee on, or the sprinklers right above it. So I want to go to the cloud. Okay, good. Let's get you in the cloud. So those are really, really good reasons why companies outgrow their sort of legacy accounting systems or QuickBooks. And here's the thing though, and if you get anything, I'll probably say this on every slide, but if you get anything from this presentation, I really want you to remember, don't change your software unless you have to. So again, these are great reasons to look at. And you'll know innately, you know, if we really should drive into this. But if it doesn't feel like you need to change, don't do it. It's not worth it. So here's our first question for CPE. And please, 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 folks that are looking for your continuing professional education, answer this question. So you'll see it just popped up here on the poll. So the question is, what are the most common reasons why companies outgrow their accounting software? So we've got growth, legacy technology, regulatory, new leadership, or really all the above. I gave you a little bit of an opinion too on what we've seen, but really, really interested in seeing what you think are the most common reasons why companies outgrow their accounting software. So we'll give you just a minute to do that. Good. Perfect. Okay, good. Thank you. So let's go on to our next question here. Pardon me, next slide here. And maybe if we can get the results, I'd be interested in them, but that's okay if we can't too. So, oh, there we go. Good. Bing. That's exactly right. What we have seen is really all the above are very common reasons why companies outgrow their accounting software. But I will tell you that very, very, very often, one of our qualifiers actually, before even helping a company figure out is if they're growing. And then the legacy technology, new leadership is spot on. That those are fun conversations when, my boss is making me do it. Okay. Your boss is right. That's good. Or, wow, your boss is wrong. Uh-oh. get that resume ready. Anyway, so those are good responses. Thank you. Okay. We are really trying to help you all. And I really, 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 really mean that. I built this firm based off that premise. And I wish these were things that, as we've talked about writing books, like would anybody read a book on ERP? I guess you got to do something before you go to bed. But if there was some things that we could tell folks to do before they upgrade, that's what this slide is. Of course, I wanted to put like a million more things on this. It's already pretty big. So we sort of said, hey, what are the really key things that folks have to do when they're questioning if they should change applications here? And this is it. So, take a screenshot of this. If you want the deck, let us know too. We'll send this over to you. But if you're considering software, or you will be in the future, which is probably everybody on this call, remember these points. So I'm going to talk about each one of these sort of individually too. We've got the time here. So understand your current scene. What we mean by that is what's really going on. Like really, really going on. So I can think back to a client where, okay, we need to switch software, and they engaged us and we started looking around and we're like, we don't see any pain points. We don't see what's wrong here, as we talk about in the next bullet. But like we're really looking around trying to figure out what's going on, and bing, the admin assistant for the CEO really hated the reporting and analytics that they were getting out of a certain package. And therefore, that concept trickled through the organization that we needed to change. Needless to say, we didn't do that project. We told them, don't you dare do this. Just get a different reporting and analytics package. We just saved you $1 million, right? So you really do want to understand what your current scene is from four different dimensions: your strategy, your people, your technology, and your processes. So strategy-wise, like, are we looking to grow? Are we looking to acquire? Basically, are we looking to fix or achieve any of those last things we had on the last slide, right? Growth, legacy technology, looking at new leadership, other factors that you should consider, right? Look at those things that we sort of call them the dimensions, observations of a business. Again, strategy, people, technology, process, that should sound familiar to a lot of folks. It's based off sort of big four methodology, but just understand what is right there. That's it. Just understand it. Don't mock up something, fake something, or, oh, we're going to grow 1,000,000%, but that's not really what the organization's doing, right? We're thrilled with 5% growth. Just see what's really going on. Then look at what's wrong and what's not working. And I really mean, you sort of have to take the blinders off of kind of what you wish things were, but what they really actually are. So it's an interesting viewpoint. I think in all the years that I've been a management consultant, that's probably the biggest value that we can bring is we can look at a scene objectively and we can say, it's not right that you have five people running your AP. You get 2,000 vendor bills a month, but there's so much manual work that's going on here. And sometimes we'll go to the controller, CFO, and sort of start talking about that poke and prod a little bit on staffing. And they say, I don't know how else to do this. Like, we're barely holding on with the people that we have. So, when you're doing this for yourself, you really do have to take off the blinders and say, my other organizations that we know or have worked before in the past or whatever, we had a lot smaller AP departments. Why are we so big? It could be because we have so many transactions, we need to do it. Or it could be just because we have a lot of manual stuff going on. So that's one example of something that's wrong. Manual work, redundant kind of work, people doing a lot of non-value-added tasks. And you sort of see it in your people too. If you look across the organization, like, those CSRs, customer service representatives, are spending a ton of time doing, order management or things when we have a website that we should be getting orders through or whatever it is. You'll see it. You all... you know, you're savvy, you're well-trained, you're doing continuing professional education, you know, really, I really want you to challenge yourself here on this one to really say what's really wrong with our process and how things are working. Then determine the ideal scene. So ideally, we would still be able to keep the vendor payments where they're at, but we would take three of those AP people and we'd put them on AR, we'd put them on invoicing, or we redeploy them onto analytics or something else where it's more value add than just paying vendors' bills. That's sort of a microcosm of an ideal scene. You might even look sort of at the macro level and say, hey, ideally, our business would operate from the beginning through the end this way. It does require imagination, but I know from my training, and I can even think back to Professor Wheeler's Intermediate Accounting, Kiso and Weigand, I think is the author. I bet. Yep. That's funny. I can't believe I remembered that. I don't remember anything else. That's not true. Just a few things. But just thinking back to even, you know, sort of the academic approach on how accounting and books should be taken, you really actually know a lot. I want you to really think from that ideal scene. And that's really good too, because now you can say, okay, if we really achieve this ideal scene, what are the expected benefits that we should get? Now, if you can monetize those, that's great, but they're quantitative benefits and there are qualitative benefits. So sometimes, you know, we do need to get into numbers for sure. Other times we don't. And even for some of our clients, we have to get into net present value of those benefits over a 10-year period. There's lots of ways to identify the expected benefits, but even if it's just a bulleted list in an email that says, here's what we're going to get from new software. And it could even be retain our people longer. You know, that's something that we see often with a smaller application. Accounting application is that you got a lot of people doing a lot of manual stuff and they hate it, especially today. Or it could be able to attract new talent because, you know, some organizations aren't up to the technology level that, you know, younger people want to be working with. There's things like that. Those are definitely benefits. Then get into what the estimated total cost of ownership is. And I want to be fair, right? We get paid to do these models. So we start with a model. We know what the costs are, right? But from your side, you really can figure out what is the software really going to cost, right? Think about the recurring software cost because everything's SaaS, software as a service, sold as a subscription, which basically means we pay for the same thing every year, the exact same amount. Well, why would we do that? Well, there's IT benefits and we don't have to worry about the servers and security and, you know, all the feature functionality that we get for free now, with our annual subscription. But think about the software costs as well as the one-time costs of implementation. So you have an implementation partner that comes in and is able to actually configure your application, include that. You might also include some internal costs. Like we have a client right now, actually here in Denver, who's going through an implementation and there's about five people that the entire organization is about a $1 billion organization is writing on these five people showing up and doing the implementation. So it might be a good idea to bonus them because they also have a day job too. So that's an example of a cost, right? We actually say 10 to 20% of the project should go towards internal costs. That might be backfill also. And there might be external project managers, data migration. We could do a whole seminar on data migration. Nobody would come, but I would feel like I'm done as an advisor because I told everybody what they needed to know. Data migration, literally just got off the call with a client who's about to sign contracts. And she was rightfully like, wait a minute, they don't do data migration. The implementation partner doesn't do data migration. I was like, you're exactly right. We do. And I wish we didn't have to, frankly, because it's the hardest thing in the world, but somebody has to do it. So anyway, include costs in for maybe your internal people, internal charge to IT, if you have to do that, or even some temps that can help you with that. But there's a data migration cost that needs to go in. So, you know, we would typically say maybe 20, 25% of the software plus the implementation, the technical configuration, add 20, 25% on for external resources and another 10% to 20 for your internal people. So just a couple metrics, just a couple benchmarks there. Couple more things on this slide. Definitely take a look at change management risks and identify mitigation. So just because you have a change management risk doesn't mean you shouldn't move forward because you do have change management risks when you go through switching software unequivocally, but what are you going to do about them, right? And if you can handle those change management risks, one of which is our people are going to leave us because they're already working hard, and then we're going to make them work harder in an implementation. Okay, well, compensation is one of those mitigations that may make sense, but it's also more than that. You know, key people in an organization want to learn and grow and provide more value. So we're going to find those people and put them in place to lead the project. That's a great mitigation. Other mitigation, other change management risks that we've seen are, well, data migration is a huge one. Selecting the wrong software, the implementation goes longer. We have some clients in the retail industry, and you do not touch their systems. I mean, one client was really Labor Day to the end of the year. Do not touch the system. Fine, right? You have seasonality in your business. You need to account for that. So that's again, an example of another change management risk. So look through those, make sure those risks can be mitigated. Then go to your key stakeholders to say, this is what we're looking at doing. This is why. Maybe even show them some of the homework that you did in those previous bullets so that you build the confidence in them that we thought through this and get their agreement. So, you know, don't just change the accounting software without talking to sales. There will be some impact to them. Sales, who's probably not on this call. I wish I could say that directly to them, but they're not here. Sales, don't just go out and get a new CRM and expect accounting to be happy. You got to make sure you're building in costs and things at the order configuration up front that are going to lead to, you know, accounting ultimately saying, what are you guys doing, right? So you really want to get that agreement with the key stakeholders across the business. And it's not everybody in the business. It's just those that are really impacted and have influence and opinion leaders, if you will, over others. And make sure they're on board with at least now going to selection. So that is the nuanced thing that, you know, I don't know if I've ever really talked about that on these calls, and we've done a lot of them. Is that what you're doing at this level is sort of getting the strategy set, and then you're going to others to say, here's the strategy that we're following, and I want to get your opinion on that. We're not getting your opinion on we're going to switch to NetSuite. We're not even close to that. We're just saying we want to go to market and look for software, and here's all the homework that we've done. Do you agree that we should go look at software or not? Because if you can't get the agreement to even go look, don't drag the vendors and your team and everybody else through the nightmare of going through a selection if you already know that some key stakeholders aren't on board. So that's when you start the selection, when you have all this done. And like we say here, don't call any software vendors until you basically have done this homework and have this agreement for sure. So I think our next slide is another question. Let's see here. So the question here is true or false. A growing company should always upgrade from QuickBooks or their legacy accounting software. Let's see how we do on this one. I think we're getting in some answers now. That's good. Perfect. I feel like we're doing the lottery, and the winning combination is... Good. We'll have the answer pop up here in just a minute. Perfect. So while we're waiting for that, I do want to make sure we use the time here wisely. So we've gone through sort of what we call the analysis, the strategy phase at this point. We've gotten the right key stakeholders to agree, oh my gosh, we got to do something. Don't really want to, but we got to do it, right? That's the most rational answer you can possibly expect from stakeholders in this process. If you have somebody who's like, yeah, let's go do it. Okay, that's sort of a daredevil. Be careful. but now that we've gotten that agreement in, we sort of know our benefits, our costs, our risks, what the mitigations are. Now let's talk about selection. And this is basically a selection process that I've developed. I started doing selections in the 90s. And since that time have sort of refined each of these steps. We do still refine these as we find improvements. But this is a really valuable and easy sort of what we call down selection vetting process that's based on stage gates. So we have five stage gates that a vendor has to get through. usually we try to put as few vendors in at the beginning as possible, because at the end we know there's going to be one, just one. That is the independent variable here that never changes, is there will be one software vendor and implementation partner. Now, sometimes in a selection process, especially our competitors, we'll sort of focus on an application and then go do the analysis of finding an implementation partner. And for very, very, very large deals, so multi-billion dollar, $10 billion or bigger organizations, that makes a lot of sense for some several different reasons. But for most of our clients, shoot, we've got clients that are a million or 2 million early stage companies, well-funded, all the way to billions of dollars, low billions. What makes more sense is to sort of get a software vendor, so the software vendor sort of identified. So we're talking about NetSuite, Intacct, Acumatica, Microsoft, Unit4, Epicor. There's tons and tons and tons of different vendors depending on the sector of software that we're looking at or the industry. But get those vendors identified and then determine who the right implementation resources are as early as you can. You can work with the software vendors to do that, do a little bit of research, and you'll learn it sort of going through the process too. But try to get the software vendor implementation partners sort of identified up front in step one, right? So you do the research, who's out there, who knows my industry, you know, like if you're interested in, let's say you're a life sciences firm, pharmaceutical organization, and you're interested in NetSuite, just type in pharmaceutical NetSuite into Google and see what pops up, right? We do that. But we also call NetSuite and we know the right people to ask to say, hey, who are the top partners that have the most referenceable customers and experience in this industry? You can ask those questions of the software vendor too. Don't forget that. So do your research and then you can talk to the vendor and say, hey, this is sort of what we're thinking in terms of software. I want to know more about you. How many people do you have? How long have you been in business? What other apps do you sell? If you're talking to an implementation partner and they sell 3 or 4 or 5 apps like the accounting firms do, well, are they really all in on that software vendor, right? Versus another implementation partner that just does that software vendor. There's something to be said for that. Sometimes, you know, it just depends too, right? But validate the fit. Ask about bill rates. Just list bill rates. You're always going to get lower, but at least ask the bill rates. And then you can sort of like do these intro calls. It takes a little bit to get to the right person. You start off with a business development representative who's going to try to qualify you. Fine, do that. Then you get to this right person where you can say, okay, these are the questions I need to get answered. And don't schedule a demo at this point. Don't do it. The vendor's going to say, okay, would you like a demo? And it's very, very, very easy to say, of course I do. I want to see this thing. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it yet. Just get that in that, okay, these guys know my industry. These gals know, they've done this before, whatever it is. Like they're really qualified to do what we're trying to do. Great. Now go to the next step, which is in the next level of detail, sort of write out a demonstration script as best as you can by area of your organization. And look, we write, they're actually not that big. We do not write big RFIs. We actually had a client a couple of days ago said, I expected more requirements. And we said, no, you don't. You don't want that. You want the key requirements at this level, but write them out in a demonstration script and, you know, definitely get an NDA, of course, in place. And then send that RFI that has your demonstration script and maybe a little bit of information about you all over to the vendors. Have them respond to that. So let's say there's 4 vendors that you're interested in. Don't send this thing to 40. You are creating so much effort and time on your side that you could get fired. And I really mean that. You don't need to do that. There's enough reports. Look at our website. You know, we're telling you who the most viable vendors are in the market. Don't go out to some vendor nobody's ever heard of unless you're in a very specific niche, like flooring, not just construction, not just subcontractors, but flooring. And man, there are a lot of small, really good firms out there. Fire departments that used to be the same way, although they've consolidated. But anyway, try to send your RFI to the vendors that are most qualified and viable, long-term viability, which you should have defined in the first step, the first stage gate. Get that over and then receive that responses. Give them 7 days. They don't need a lot of time to respond to these things. It does, you know, 14, 21 days. Some of the government companies or clients that we work with have very specific procurement rules. Fine. Follow those, of course. But get those responses back and then evaluate the responses side by side by side. Because here's what you just did. When you talk to people on over the phone or over a Zoom or whatever it is, you might say one thing to one vendor and another thing to another vendor. And then ultimately you're going to say, hey, show me just some estimated pricing. Whoop, they come in and you have apples and bananas, not even apples and oranges, but like bananas, where it's so different. Oh, we told the second vendor that we actually do want to replace our CRM and include it in the ERP. The first one, we didn't even know that, right? So by at least doing the RFI and just saying, here's a common set of requirements as we know them today, and we want you to show us these things, the vendors then you sort of get an apples to apples with their responses back. So then inevitably you'll be able to pick the vendors that won't make you look like an idiot when you bring them in to do demonstrations and you bring in the rest of your team to see them. I really mean that, right? Don't waste your team's time on bringing in a teeny tiny app that's going to do terrible. I remember that happened to us on a specific, it was a legacy, the vendor was a legacy vendor with the client that we wanted to give them a shot. They came in and, after a couple F-bombs and some other things, the owner was like, you have completely wasted my entire morning here, walked out. And we were like, that wasn't very good. So the mini demo here on 3, another little tip, don't invite the CEO to the mini demo. This is really an opportunity to sort of do a high level run through from beginning to end at, again, a high level of the application, and you get a feel for the usability, the user experience, user interface, some of the functionality, some of the vendor's capabilities in knowing your business. And that sort of helps to sort of do the next level of qualification of the vendors. And you will see, let's say you have 4 vendors that give great RFI responses, their pricing makes sense, and yeah, we can do all this stuff, great. You'd go to the mini demo, inevitably, 2 of those 4, might even be 3, better not be all 4, but half of them, you will see the demonstration like, ew, I didn't get a good feel from those people. Okay, that means something. Or, wow, that app was really, really hard to understand. I didn't get that. You know, if you're coming off a green screen AS400 that we've had for 20, 30 years, sometimes when you see these more advanced applications, it just doesn't make sense. Whereas something that's a little more legacy does make sense. So use that mini demo vetting to sort of pre-qualify the vendors to the next level of, hey, here's 2 good vendors, maybe 3, that we think would do really well for us. Then take them to a final demo where you're inviting people from the entire organization to come in and see from beginning to end how these applications work. And you might even break up that final demo into, hey, let's spend a couple hours on sales. Maybe there's an hour on purchasing, hour on, or 2 hours on inventory warehouse management if you're a distributor, manufacturing projects, segment out these chunks. Accounting maybe gets more time. If you want to get into more details, fine. But segment your final demo out so people can come in and out as they sort of need to. I mean, of course, my team goes through a lot of little nuanced things of making sure you got discovery calls and demonstration preparation documents and those kinds of things. You know, if you're running this yourself, it's helpful to say, hey, here's who's going to be at the meetings, that kind of thing. But, the vendors are really professional, can work through some of that too on their own. So that hopefully by the time you get to stage 4, the end of the final demo vetting, that last sort of stage gate, you're down to one vendor that you can say, you know what, we can see us running our business in this product, right? Sometimes it's both. Frankly, in my world, if a client says, wow, either of these products are great. We just had this earlier this week where a client said, the CEO said, I can see my business in either of these products. I like both vendors. Great. What do we do now? Well, you're not done yet. You go to the 5th stage here, which is called the final selection due diligence. And you do maybe some functionality deep dives, like, hey, which one handles available to promise functionality better, right? Or which one integrates better with Avatax or Avalara or Vertex or whatever it is. And you would also do technology deep dives and also, so platform, oh, you're SaaS, what does that mean for you? Oh, we run an AWS. Well, wait a minute, is it my own instance? Who takes care of my instance? Oh, we do. Okay, but what if we do the upgrade? Who's going to manage the upgrade? We do that. Okay, fine. Like, that makes sense. And well, when do you tell me when the upgrade is going to be? Oh, we give you 2 weeks notice. What? I have to go out and do regression testing in 2 weeks? That's crazy. I need longer than that. Well, that's good. That's why you do the technology deep dive, right? Implementation partner deep dive, really get to know the resources that would be part of your project too. Those are sort of in that 5.1 step. And from there, then you'll really know the differences between the two vendors, and you'll probably down select to one, then go to the vendor executive sponsor meeting, get cell phone number. Is that listed as a key point? It should be. Get the cell phone number for an executive where when the problems happen and the implementation team is too busy, they don't know what they're doing, whatever, get a phone number, a cell phone number, because you'll get it now. After you sign the contracts, you probably would still, but you're definitely going to get it now. But get that number for somebody who can really help when you run into problems. Definitely check references. Notice how late on the cycle this is where we're checking references. Usually the references don't change the direction, right? You would think the vendors would give you great references. Sometimes they don't, and that's helpful to know. But it's more important that you know somebody else who's been through what you're about to go through. Then, of course, negotiate final contracts. Usually there's a little bit of negotiation happening throughout this whole five-dot step. But now we can say, okay, here's what we need to close this deal, get that done, and then basically you're selecting your final vendor once you see those terms and conditions. So I'm exhausted. I wish the call was done right now because that is so much work to do. And we're in 16 of these things right now, and it's a lot. A lot. But here's the thing. You're about to make a decision. You know, you basically have like, you know, select a partner for business, you know, get married. Then you have pick an ERP partner and the software vendor, just in terms of how your future survival is going to be geared towards. This is a big deal. It's worth it to do your homework now, flesh out what you can, because afterwards, it's going to be a little bit harder. Good. That's what we do for selection process. So I do want to change the tone here a little bit. You know, sometimes these calls are a little bit of a hat pass from me to you, honestly, on things that I've observed over the years that can help many, many others. So I hope that's how you look at those first couple discussions here. So let's get a little bit of education here in over the next couple slides for you all. I'm going to start off here sort of four tiers of accounting applications. So I really like this slide. Our digital marketing managers helped me sort of go through this several times, and I really like it because it's simple. That, you know, you go to your CEO and say, hey, we need a new ERP. You know, ERP advisors group said for me to do all this stuff. I did it. And I want to go get SAP, right? Probably tears could come out of the CEO's eyes. Like, there's no way we're going to do that. That could kill us. Or no, maybe some CEOs are ready for that level of software. But you also have sort of the onus here to sort of do a little bit of education or say, no. When you hear ERP doesn't mean SAP or Oracle or IFS or some big application, it could mean something smaller. So we've got sort of four tiers of software. And on the left-hand side, that's basically sort of the company sizes that we typically see making these decisions. So tier four, as you can see, think QuickBooks, Sage 50, Xero, FreshBooks, sort of smaller applications. Now, here's the thing is these bands aren't absolute. Like I said, we had a client that was $100 million running QuickBooks, right? So they can move up and down. But basically, tier four applications are really handling accounting. GL, you know, AP, AR, GL kind of financial statements, core accounting, maybe a little bit of time tracking, maybe a teeny tiny bit of inventory, but even like QuickBooks needs like a fishbowl or something else to do some of those more departmental specific functions. Tier three applications, we have just a couple listed here, but these are good from a GL perspective. Maybe they handle multiple legal entities too, but they're also bringing in functionality from other departments that's integrated in with accounting. And you can see sort of the sizes. Again, we have a $15 million client that came off of QuickBooks that went into a tier two package into NetSuite recently because they needed deeper functionality across the organization. And they also had some customization that they needed to do. So we're doing a lot with clients on the Infor Cloud Suite right now, lots with Microsoft. There's several other products here, Sage, Intacct, Epicor, Acumatica, Dell Tech, even sort of some of the other applications that sort of fit in this, like all the way across the organization software, but it's not super deep. versus the tier ones where it's all the way across the organization, every department, and it goes very, very, very deep. And we have lots of transactions, they're complex operations, and we really have a high, high, high need for automation. Usually that tier one makes a lot of sense. But each of these products, there's risks with that, but there's a lot of rewards too between SAP and Oracle and even the bigger Microsoft package, Workday, IFS, and the N4 larger products, M3 and LN we'd put on there also. There are great instances where it makes sense to do that, more international business, multi-company consolidation kind of stuff that we don't want to go to an FP&A tool. We'll talk about that in a minute. So think about four tiers of accounting applications when you go to market. So here's our next question. Which of the four tiers of accounting applications is QuickBooks in? So we've got tier one, tier two, tier three, or tier four. And this is important because let's say we're in a package that's in tier four. How's that going to go for you if you go to a tier one? Remember, there's a couple other gradient steps there. Good. If you'll put your answers in, that'll be great. Good. Perfect. We'll close the polling here in just a moment. Good. Okay. Thank you. Remember, you got to answer the questions for CPE too. Thank you for doing that. Good. So that's sort of the four tiers of accounting software and ERP. Remember, there are other kinds of software out there, really financial reporting tools, right? And we just did a presentation with Financial Executives International on this, just on this topic. I think like the slide, right? And the next one, which is to say that on top of an ERP, very, very common, our clients will need different types of reporting tools. So I'm going to talk about these really quickly, and then I'm going to do a quick summarization. We'll do one more question, and we're going to wrap. And I'd love to have some questions from you all if you'd like to. So financial reporting tools, I'm going to go through these pretty quickly, but again, sort of good nuggets for you all to keep in mind. So, wow, we want not just balance sheet, financial statements, you know, income statement, statement of operations for nonprofits, but like we really want to understand and have pretty pictures like we've got here on our slide, profitability by geography or retention of employees by different business units or even customer service. Across all of our entities, different types of things that normally organizations, executives, you know, the pretty picture people like to have sometimes, which is a good thing, but there's also deeper analytics and cubes of data. There's all this stuff that I know you all have heard of. So I want you to remember there's basically five kinds of tools out there, and there's different instances where you'd use each one, and I'm going to talk about that like quickly. So BI and data visualization, Power BI, Tableau, Click, there's a lot of products that fit into that area. We've done a lot with, there's an organization out of Utah called Domo. Those are products where you shove data in and then they do some kind of transformation over them to put them into a format that looks good in a diagram. And then you can dive through. So think of something simple like a view of North America, Canada, the US, and numbers that we can click through to see by city, by even locality, zip code, what sales are, right? BI data visualization, those tools answer that problem. They're there for that problem. Whereas FP&A, which many, many of you on this call know, is financial forecasting and budgeting, which in especially last year, we really learned the value of having these tools where, okay, here's my financial forecast for the year. And then, wow, we shut down. We can't go to the office. Our production shut down. Fortunately, manufacturing didn't, but a lot of other organizations had to. So what does that change for the budget and for the forecast? And what do we do for kind of the response and reaction to these market factors? Being able to plan that out, which Excel gives us the ability to do, but sometimes the models get so complex, the FP&A tools allow us to do that. Multi-company consolidation, this is where we're doing a lot of intercompany transactions and we need to do a roll-up and sort of even financial currency exchange rates, really applying sort of the consolidation at a really global level where it gets very complex. You can go out and get consolidation tools to help you with that process too. And then there's financial close solutions that sort of help to automate some manual tasks that you're doing as the office of the CFO as part of your close. So we want to have accounting entries, reconciliations done, and we can do approvals over those journal entries, track the approvals, track what the journal entry is, and then even import that into the accounting system. And finally, we have the ERP itself. And you know, if you talk to any ERP vendor and say, I need strong financial reporting, they'll say, we have 500 reports out of the box. So why could you possibly need anymore? I guarantee you're still going to need something specific to you. Hopefully you can take one of those 500 and customize them. But think about, you know, you sort of have Power BI, Tableau is the first type. I think it's called Adaptive Insights still, that now Workday owns, Planful. Those kinds of applications are FP&A. You know, the Hyperion tools, the EPM, Enterprise Performance Management from Oracle, it's more multi-company consolidation, and even OneStream, some of those products fit in there, usually targeted towards larger organizations. And then BlackLine as an example of financial close solutions and some other stuff like that. If you want to find other competitors, just take a name like I just said and put in BlackLine competitors, and Flowcast will pop up or whatever else. So that'll give you at least enough breadcrumbs to sort of look into the market on those. So at this point, let's do a quick summary here. We're running close to the end of our time. Again, you know, I really look at this like, man, I wish all my clients knew these things even before we started talking to them. They will know when we're done for sure. But these are five key things that we've sort of identified here from this discussion to remember. Please don't change software unless you really have to. And I really, really mean that. We've had people end up in the hospital. You know, people want to quit or, you know, whatever, right? Thankfully, it hasn't been any worse than that. The hospital thing, she was pregnant and just had to go on bed rest, but she was still on her laptop. Anyway, pregnant controller. Really, if you're going to go through this, just make sure, right, that that you really need to do the change. We've given you some really good indicators earlier of things that would drive the reasons for change. Make sure you really understand what you need before you make a single call to vendors too. As soon as you start talking to the software vendors, they will start saying things that you want to hear, but are those the things you really need to hear? I want you to really keep that in mind, that you really should understand. We're really looking for new financial consolidation capabilities with automation on AP, and we need recurring revenue automation on the AR side. That's great. Those three things, just even say that, right? Give them more direction on what to do. And then you drive the selection process by telling the vendor what you want. So, you know, I really, really, really have found the most success in saying, here's my requirements. Tell me what your pricing is. Not just have a lot of flapping of the jaws conversations to start. Do that first, then do a mini or a micro demo or an overview demo, and then do the final, and then do your deep dives. You drive that process with the vendor. They won't like it, but you know, the really good vendors will. They're like, wow, these guys are really doing their homework, and I want a client that knows what they're getting into. Get the implementation done as fast as possible. Of course, test it. But this is sort of the bonus here on top of this topic that we didn't get into a lot on implementation. Maybe we'll do that for another call if there's interest. But the bottom line here is ERP implementations are like heart surgery. The longer the chest is open, the more likely bad things are to happen. So, you know, be clear on what your requirements are. Get your contract, your implementation people, external people, your internal people aligned. Start the project and then get a win in 3 to 6 months if you can, right? We're talking to a global organization right now, and we're going to do a phase one that's a year. That's fine, because that is actually, they have multiple phases that are going to be planned after that. You have to look at what your existing software does today, how integrated it is. Sometimes you got to do a big bang. But if it's possible to do a phased approach on implementation, do that so that you get the win, get that change management sort of done, and get people comfortable with the app to then add more and more and more. Think about gradients, that the lower the gradient, the easier the first phase is, go with that. And then definitely remember, we're always around. We have our lead salesperson. We call it Erica's free consulting software consulting service. She answers a lot of questions for people. And sometimes there's projects for us. Sometimes there's not. But just give us a call and, you know, run your project by us. We can at least get you going in the right direction for sure. I think we have one more question too. So this will be our final question. What do you feel is the most important step to consider for a company that has outgrown its accounting software? So A, don't change software unless you have to. Make sure you really understand what you need. Drive the selection process by telling the vendor what you want. And then finally, get the implementation done as fast as possible. So this helps us to understand sort of how our messaging resounds with you all. So if you can please answer that question. I think that's good. Perfect. Good. Okay, so we'll close that polling out. If for some reason you didn't get to answer one of the questions or have any questions, we want to make sure you get the appropriate credit for CP, and we do have to have a record of you answering the question so that you didn't fall asleep. It's easy to do. But please just send us an email. Send an email to Juliette, J-U-L-I-E-T-T-E at erpadvisorsgroup.com. You can always submit an answer to her later. But thank you for your time. We do have a few minutes here. If there are any questions, if not, that's totally fine. But if you'd like to put some questions in here, we can certainly go through those.
ERP Advisors Group is one of the country's top independent enterprise software consulting firms, advising mid to large-sized businesses on selecting and implementing business applications, including ERP, CRM, HCM, business intelligence, and other enterprise applications, which equate to millions of dollars in software deals each year across many industries. This has been the ERP Advisor.